The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, I'm supposed to talk about renunciation, because it's the day of the Buddha's renunciation. And the Buddha grew up in as a prince in great wealth, and it had been predicted at his birth that he'd either become a universal monarch or a Buddha. And his father wasn't at all interested in him becoming a Buddha. He wanted him to become a universal monarch and pass on the kingdom to him, plus any others that he could gather in the meantime. But he led a very sheltered life with great wealth and lots of distractions and no sign of anything to be bothered by. The flowers were picked in the garden before they died so that he wouldn't see the flowers dying. The different palaces for different seasons and all the luxuries and music and whatever you could want. But he wanted to go out and see the world. And his father was very reluctant to let him do that. But eventually he got the local village cleaned up as much as he could, and so that he wouldn't be bothered by anything he saw there. But the four kings of heaven came down and messed things up for him. So one appeared as a sick person, another appeared as an old person, another appeared as a dead person, and another appeared as a monk. And at each of these first three, he asked his charioteer, Jana, says, you know, what's going on here? And he said, well, that's a sick person. And he said, that's going to happen to all of us. And that's an old person, and that's going to happen to all of us. And he realized that just pursuing a life of pleasure and military might was not necessarily going to be all there is in life. And when he saw the monk, he realized that there's something that he could do to solve this problem of suffering. And I think at first he was thinking was more solving the problems of suffering for the world. He later discovered that you can solve the problems of suffering for yourself, but you can't cure that for the human condition, because each person has the ability to do this for themselves. And he's not a savior. He didn't take on the responsibility of converting everybody's karma. He showed everybody that they could convert their own karma, which is a very different approach to religion than some of the ones we've grown up with. And what he did was he wanted to find absolute truth. We live in a world of relative truth. But there is something greater than that. And the only way you can understand that is through religious training. And his first teachers were very happy to turn their students over to him, because it was obviously something was going on there. And he had learned everything that he could from them. But he wasn't satisfied with that. And the major practice of the day was asceticism, where you learn to eat as little as possible, sleep as little as possible, and be as miserable as possible. And he discovered that just eating less and sleeping less didn't really allow you to realize the truth. And so he left that and decided that after this vision of this heavenly musician who came down and had a three-stringed instrument. One was plucked so tight that it broke when it was touched. The other was so loose that it didn't make any sound at all. And the other one was tight enough to make a really beautiful sound, but not over-tight. And he got the message, there must be a better way of doing this. And it wasn't getting too tight and it wasn't getting too loose. It was the learning what it is to train ourselves. And it's a training in renunciation of letting go of. Basically, the thing that we have to let go of is this illusion of self, because that's the source of all the suffering. We think there is something called the self, and we've grown up with this, and we've lived with it all our lives, and we think, there's a self there. And it's really just a collection of our likes and our dislikes and our worries and fears and frustrations and greeds and angers and all of that stuff. And there isn't any sort of substance to this idea of a self. But we run around life after life thinking that I've got this self. And having the self, because as long as you think you have it, you have it. And having this thing creates all sorts of suffering. Because the self is simply that old karma that has not been converted. So we're born with our emotional program, emotions of program to react in certain ways. We react out of wanting something or not wanting something, or we react out of indifference. And this is greed, anger, and delusion. These are the three poisons. And all we have to do is let go of them. It's just that simple and just that difficult. I was talking earlier this weekend about the Thich Nhat Hanh's study of the Chinese character for patience, which is a picture of a heart at the bottom and a sharp knife above that. And his way of understanding patience isn't forbearance or enduring something. It's opening the heart to hold those things that we either like or dislike without getting hurt by them. It's like having a very sharp knife, but it's in a case. And this is how we have to deal with the self. We have to be able to hold those ideas and opinions, our likes and our dislikes, our fears, our greeds, our angers, all of our cultural and emotional and conditioning has to be held in an open heart. And so when somebody says something that could hurt our feelings, as Reverend Master Ji used to say, well, if it hurts, there's self. And it's just that simple. You know, when our feelings get hurt, it's because we're clinging to that sharp sword. And it cuts, and it hurts. And when something happens that we don't want to happen, we're attached to that. And this is ultimately what we have to renounce. This renunciation is the letting go, giving up. What the Buddha renounced was his life of pleasure, his heirship to the throne, wealth, luxury, all the good food he could possibly want. And he settled for going out with his begging bowl and take what people gave him. And realizing that peace can't come from just getting what you want, because there's going to be something you don't want, like you're going to get sick or old or something like that. And this wanting and not wanting is very deeply embedded from our karmic history as well as our cultural condition. We live in a society where you're constantly told you need something. You need a new this or a new that or something better or whatever. And we're constantly told that we have to have more than what we have. And what the Buddha discovered was that you need a little bit less than what you have. A little bit less of your wanting, and a little bit less of your not wanting, and a little bit less of the being concerned about whether you get what you want or don't get what you want, because it just doesn't really matter that much. Those wantings and not wantings are simply what we've been programmed to react to. And what we're learning in Buddhist practice is to respond from something deeper. But you have to open your heart to listen to that something deeper. And that listening is what we practice in our meditation. And it's like going from reverse to going forward. You have to stop at neutral. And this neutral there is something we have to do every day to remind ourselves that there is a place where we can actually sit still and listen to something deeper. And nobody can do this for us. Everybody has to be able to do this for themselves, because everybody's fully equipped with the Buddha nature. We're actually all enlightened. But you have to make an effort to listen to that something deeper instead of listening to that loud chatter of likes and dislikes. And it's a constant training process. It's saying that every day we have to make this effort, whether it's not liking it when the alarm goes off, or whether it's not going to bed as soon as we'd like to, or whether it's whatever it is. It's going to come up every day. There's going to be something. They won't have the thing in the store that you're trying to buy. They won't have the food that you want. They won't have something, or you'll have too much of something. Too many people wanting your time or attention or whatever. And so we either have too much or too little. And the reality is that we have just what we need. But we have to change our attitude towards this. There's this really subtle little shift on how we perceive things. And that perception is our ability to change how we see things. And so what if we get something we don't want? We get an illness, or we get an injury, or an accident, or somebody dies that we love very deeply, or somebody is damaged, or whatever. And we don't like that. How do we see that? Do we see that because we're upset and we don't like it, and we're going to rail and scream and yell and moan? Or is it, oh, I can see that as an opportunity to train. I can see that as a way of looking at the thing that hurts and see if I can let go of that hurt. Can I hold that hurt in a different way? Is it possible to see those things? And some friends who, both of them had, this couple just had, both had cancer in the last year. They were out on an outing, and one of them hurt their knee. The other one, they got home and their house had been burglarized. You know, it's just like one thing after another. You'd think after years of training, life would get easier. That doesn't necessarily happen that way. Things happen. You know, somebody sticks in and takes stuff out of your house while you're away. Somebody, you have a car accident. Drunk driver turns in front of you. These things can be helpful to us if we see them in a different way. Instead of seeing them through this filter of self, whether I like it or dislike it, we have to see this as, what can I do to change that into something that I can learn from? And this little subtle shift to realize that those painful things are showing us our ignorance. And ignorance isn't a bad thing, it's just that we don't know something. And that what we usually don't know is where the self has just gotten in the way. And it's to greet those things with an open heart. It takes a good deal of practice. It doesn't just happen automatically because you're a nice people. It happens because you make an effort to see where it is that your ignorance causes you suffering. And when you see that as, I don't know something, then you're in a position of learning. But when you see it through, I don't want this, you just make more suffering for yourself. or the thing that you most want has just been taken away. What do you do under those circumstances? Do you look at that through the eyes of meditation, or do you look at through that filter of self? Because the filter of self is what keeps us from being able to explore and understand this world of enlightenment. And even if we get a little glimpse of it, it's only a little glimpse. When Dilgo Khyentse was asked by the 10-year-old, what's the difference between money and enlightenment? He just said, well, the money runs out eventually and enlightenment increases forever. Forever. And it's a very big universe. The universe that we see is only part of many universes. So if enlightenment is going to increase forever, no matter how far along we've gone on this road, there's still an infinity and several more infinities that need exploring. And this infinite exploration into enlightenment is also an infinite exploration into our ignorance. And the more we can greet that ignorance, laughing at the door, as Rumi says, and welcome it in, because that's to see that as something to learn from is a great gift. And our willingness to accept these difficult things in life and to hold them in a soft way, to hold them with our heart being open. And it's not automatic. We work on it all the time. And every time something happens that we don't like, we have to realize, oh, open my heart. It's okay. Whatever the reality is, the Buddha described his enlightenment as simply seeing things as they truly are. So if you can accept the truth on its terms, you can know what the Buddha knows. But it's a wholehearted acceptance of the truth as it is, not as we'd like it to be. This is what renunciation is about. It's letting go of the wanting and the not wanting. It's seeing that those hurt feelings, those angers, frustrations, those resentments, the likes and the dislikes are simply a manifestation of our ignorance. And it's there because we need to look at it. We need to learn from it. It's actually a gift. And when you see it as a gift, you perceive it in a way that I can open it and enjoy it. When you see it as, I don't want this. I don't like this. This is not what I bargained for. Well, it's just exactly what you bargained for. You chose to be born. We all chose to be born. We're here because we chose to be born. And we can't even blame our parents. We chose them too. And it's up to us to see how to fully accept the responsibility for this bundle of karma. And it's just a whole lot easier to accept it than it is to fight against it. But it's not automatic. We have to work at it. And it's a constant process of renouncing. It's a constant process of leaving that world of luxury and having what I want, and stepping into the reality. This is a human condition. There are wars. People are getting raped and murdered, and some people are starving. Some people don't have enough medicine. Some, there's just a lot of suffering in this world. And we can't necessarily solve it all, but we can do something about ourselves. And we can donate to people who are helping others, and we can see what it is to give. I was with somebody the other day, who, very generous person. We were driving at night over the mountain, and there was a couple on the side of the road without a jacket or a flashlight or anything. She immediately stops and offers these people some help. Just because she saw immediately beings in need of help. And just, she didn't even have to think about it. She just she just did it because she's been doing it all her life. And that training yourself is a lifelong process of seeing what it is that I can give to the situation. What can I give to help in some ways? But it's getting the I out of the wanting to give. And just giving because that's what needs to be done. And sometimes the giving is saying no. The cat brought in a mouse the other night and she got to spend the night outside. Until the mouse could figure out how to get through the crack under the door. And she's going to bring in a being and it's still alive. She gets thrown out. Well, there's all sorts of ways of giving. Sometimes, as Master Di used to say, sometimes all prayers are answered. Sometimes the answer is yes, and sometimes it's no. They're all answered. Just not necessary. This is why we offer merit rather than pray for a specific result. Because it doesn't really, the result is not so much important as the process. And understanding what that process of training is, it's converting that ignorance. So when we're confronted with those things that are difficult in life, if we can just hold that lightly, that's the renunciation. To see that we can give up that clinging. Because the clinging is what causes that sharp thing to hurt. We can hold it in a lighter way.